Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest today, very happy to have former BYU football player Kalen Hall. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing really good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's always good to see you. I see you quite a bit. We don't ever really get a chance to talk at length.
Right.
But I obviously when Jaron was here, I would see you around football, and when Dawson was with the baseball team, I would see you at Miller Park all the time. So I seem to see you a lot. And boy, you're certainly one of those sports dads that's just out there supporting your kids, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, as we have children, whatever they decide to do and the path they take, you know, as parents, we just support them. You know, we do it to the best of our abilities. And I've been very fortunate to have my kids be engaged with things that, you know, I enjoy anyway.
Yeah.
And so it's not a stretch for me to go to games and to sit in the stands and to bring grandkids and to, you know, see the local kids throughout the community on these different teams. So it's been a lot of fun. So.
What's it like to be a grandfather?
Oh, it's the best. You know, we have four grandkids, and Jaron's going to have another one. So we'll have a fifth one here in March. And so it's awesome. You know, you get to spoil them. You get to have fun with them. You don't do any parenting at all.
Yep.
You know,
give them right back.
We give them back when all that stuff needs to take place. And we just get to love them up, enjoy all the best parts. So it's been a lot of fun.
Well, let's talk about a pretty eventful 2023 for your family. First season as the head coach at Maple Mountain High School, correct?
That's correct.
Right? Yeah. So, and it was the year in which your son Jaron became an NFL player with the Minnesota Vikings, drafted 164th overall by Minnesota. What has this last year and a half been like for you and your family with everything kind of going on?
You know, it's kind of been status quo, I would say, for me personally, because honestly, I don't allow the external things to affect what I do daily, right? Because I have no control over it. I simply, you know, enjoy the process, and I've enjoyed the ride that has come with all of these different things. And it's just been a fun experience for me to see my kid go through what he went through, and then being able to come back to my home community and to accept a calling to be the head football coach, because it's not a job. You know, it's high school football.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get paid to do it. You do it as a calling to your community. And I've never coached in my community, although I've been around and I've coached for well over 26 odd years at the high school level. And so it just was an opportunity for me to come back and to pay it forward to my community. So,
what was the transition like for you as a dad going from BYU quarterback Jaron Hall's dad and supporting him in that role and now supporting him as an NFL quarterback? What was that transition like?
I don't know. I think that, like, for me, being that, you know, I had an opportunity to play a little professional football. I've had several friends that have played. I've had nephews play. I've had extended family members playing in NFL. And so I've had a little bit of an idea of what it is. And I've always prepared myself, because I always thought Jaron would get an opportunity to play in the NFL. Quite frankly, I thought KJ would have had it not been for the injuries.
Sure.
But I just prepared myself to understand that, first and foremost, that, you know, it is a business. It's something that you can't count on, but you can be grateful for. And at the end of the day, I just am there to support my son in any capacity that I can, and to, you know, keep him in a position where, you know, emotionally he doesn't get too high or too low, and just understand the nature of any professional sport in such that it is a business. And it's quite often some people may say it's a cutthroat business, right, for lack of a better term. And ultimately, you know, I my emotions never ran high or low. I just was, because I knew how hard Jaron worked first and foremost, and I know that he can play in that league. And I you know, I told him as recently as a couple of like a month ago, I said, hey, you're gonna have a great NFL career. You just always steady the course and do what you've always done. Be you, be genuine, be authentic, and work harder than everybody else on the right things. So,
as a dad, and this is with all of your children, are you the type of dad that will solicit advice, or do you wait for your kids to come to you and ask for something like that?
I think it really depends. Mostly, I'll wait until they come and ask me. But if I see an area in which I've had some experience, or or I've had someone give me some information that I believe is pertinent and that could help, then I would share that. But ultimately, you know, my kids are, they're grown. They should be able to make their own decisions. Ultimately, it's their own free agency to do as they see what's best in their favor and their family's favor. So thereby, you know, I don't give too much advice. I try to give less advice on anything that deals with work and sports and more advice on the things that come from a spiritual nature. So,
well, I don't know how many opportunities I'll have to do this, so I'm going to take this opportunity to do this now. As a father myself, I know what it means to me when I hear people from the outside will come up and compliment my children. That obviously makes me proud as a dad.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I've gotten to know Jaron pretty well over the years. I got to know Dawson pretty well with the baseball team. And I've got to tell you, with those two children particularly, because those are the ones I got to know, you could not ask for two better young men. Yeah. And those guys, they're great human beings. They're kind. They're generous. They're obviously fantastic athletes, but as people, you and your wife did a fantastic job with those two young men.
Well, and I think, you know, Holly did a phenomenal job, more so than me. You know, you know, all the good parts came from her and all the negative stuff came from me. And we're just grateful that our kids, you know, have made choices for the most part just to be who they are and just to be genuine, authentic young people and to, you know, to for the most part stand by their faith and just to ultimately, you know, try to guide their lives in a sphere in which they believe that it's something that they should take. You know, yeah. They're not perfect. Everyone has their flaws. But, you know, those two young men, all my boys have been really good people. And that's the most thing I'm proud of. I mean, to the point that you just made when someone says how good of a young person that your son is. And that speaks in more volumes than anything that has to do with sports or anything else is that compliment about the nature of the man. So. Yeah.
Let's go back to you were talking about your first year as the head football coach at Maple Mountain. Was that always something that you wanted to do? Is it something that maybe you didn't think you'd have the opportunity to do? Take me through that.
Well, no. Like I mentioned, I've coached high school football for an awful long time.
Yeah.
I've coached at Payson High School with Jamal back in early 1998, I believe. Coached at Spanish Fork with Scott Brumfield. And then I coached with my brother Andy Stokes at Temp View for like 5 or 6 years. And then when this opportunity came up in my home area, literally the high school is not more than 3 minutes from my house. All of my sons went to school there. I never coached there because I didn't want to coach my kids.
Sure.
Right? I just didn't want to be a part of that process. Actually, when Kyson was in his sophomore and junior year, from Kyson's sophomore year on, I was coaching at Temp View while he was playing at Maple Mountain. And so it was never a matter of me having an opportunity to. I just never wanted to.
Gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
And when this opportunity opened up as the head coaching position came available, I was like, you know what? It's no better time than now. I have just my daughter who's a soccer player, unrelated to football. I love the game of football. I love the kids in my community. I think that our community is absolutely a phenomenal place to raise a family. Thereby, I wanted to try to instill some core values in which I brought my kids up on this football field. And plus, I think there's so much talent from just a playing perspective and a player perspective in my community that there is a powerhouse to be developed there at Maple Mountain. And I wanted to be a part of that. And I believe they had a lot to give. And I have a lot of friends that wanted to volunteer their time as well. A lot of guys that played professional football, high-level college, coached in the college level. So I have a phenomenal staff of men that volunteer their time to our community. It's a lot, mind you, right? Because, you know, I demand a lot. Because my theory is if you're going to do it the right way. And it's not about, are you doing too much? No, it's like, you know, we're not doing anything that other successful programs in the state are doing, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we're bringing. It's a lot different than what was there previously. A lot more demands, a lot more time, but, you know, if you want to do it, then do it the right way. So,
what life lessons have you learned as a result of football, whether it's playing football, whether it's coaching football, and how do you use those to, you know, to inform your players about what this game can do for them?
Well, I think it's honestly – it's the ultimate team sport. You know, all 11 guys have to rely on all 11 guys for any given play to work. Unlike, you know, baseball or basketball, where, you know, a guy can hit a home run or he can make a diving catch out in the outfield, or an individual on the basketball court can take the ball in his hand and, you know, dominate the ball, score and whatnot. In football, if one guy doesn't do their job, then the play breaks down, regardless if it's on offense or defense or special teams. And so you learn to rely on someone else, genuinely rely on someone else for that event to take place the way it's supposed to. And, you know, you try to tell the kids that, hey, look, all of you guys have to come together collectively. It's not about the power of me. It's the power of we, right? We all have to collectively come together in order for us to be successful. And that happens on every single play. That goes to the off-season training, because if you're training and you have 20, 30 kids that aren't, then collectively your team is not going to be as good as if everyone came together and they're at the workouts and they're training, they're working hard. And at the end of the day, you do the best that you can do. That's the other thing. Like, it's like everyone's not going to be at the same level, but you can get the max out of yourself. Everyone can be the maximum of whom they are. You know, they can be the best version of themselves. And if you're the best version of yourself genuinely, then this program or any program's going to be much, much better. And those are some of the things we try to teach the kids, that, hey, do all you can, be the best version of yourself that you can be. Ultimately, be honest. Understand that you're going to have some failures. And with failures comes success. You're not going to be perfect. I make mistakes, you know, and I'm 50 something odd years old, and I say sorry all the time, right? And it's okay to say sorry. It's okay to make mistakes, and I make sure that I model that by being a genuine, authentic person. I don't do all the right things all the time, but you know what I do? I'll make amends by saying I'm sorry, I apologize, and I own up to it. And I expect the kids to do the same thing. Right. They need to own up to the things that they are falling short with. And it's OK.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just a few things that hopefully these young people can understand, that, you know, life is not easy. You know, you're not going to be given things the way you want them. Things are not going to work out the way you want, you know, and it's not going to be a successful career at whatever it may be. But you got to learn to deal with that, you know, because there's going to be some moments in your life where you're going to have some anxiety and you're going to feel a little depressed and you're going to feel like, you know, you can't do this, that or other. But you need to learn how to work through that, whatever that is, whether that be by holding hands with somebody else, by somebody coming in and helping to pull you up and to uplift you. Like, you know, we have someone that's always uplifting us in our lives, always. All of us do. And in the sport of football, you always are as weak as your weakest link. But that weakest link is not it's not a weakness. It's just a nature of a character of man. Right. And so once we understand that, we get away from the blame game. We get away from compartmentalizing our anger and putting it off on other people, and understanding that, hey, our collective body as human beings will help us to uplift each other as long as we understand that none of us are perfect. So
I want to go back just a couple years to growing up in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So take me back to a young Kalen Hall. What was life like growing up in Vegas?
I had a good life overall. You know, single parent household, latchkey kid. Right. You know, I kind of did a lot of things on my own. So my independence was always something that I was okay with. I was okay being by myself, playing by myself. Playing pickup basketball games in my house by myself, or playing football games in my house by myself. So I was always okay being by myself. But then when I started to branch out, get into the community, start playing tackle football, you know, I became a part of a family unit that was a little bit missing in my life. And that's why I think I gravitated to football, because it had something that I didn't grow up with, right? I had a bunch of young men that were my same age, the same likeness, trying to collectively reach one common goal. And I really liked that, because I liked the camaraderie of the brotherhood. And that's what football was to me early on. You know, Vegas was a place in the early 80s that was a lot different than it is today, right? It was a lot smaller. You know, we had 13 high schools in all of Las Vegas, and now there's like 45 or 55, right? It's a much bigger place. But when I was growing up, you know, it was a small community. Everyone knew everybody, and you had an opportunity to be an individual without being overwhelmed by the masses, right? It was, yeah, it was a smaller place to grow up. You know, it was a great place to grow up. I really had a good time, although, you know, it was a place of independence for a lot of times.
What did you dream of when you thought about what this is what I want to do? When you had those thoughts, what were you thinking of?
You know, honestly, I always wanted to play professional football, right? I mean, once I became aware of the game, mm-hmm. right? Once I was introduced to it, that was my goal. It was to play professional football. It was to go to college. It was to, you know, to be like Walter Payton or to be like Billy Sims. Those are some of the early guys. You know, I was a running back, and I wanted to emulate those guys. And then when Barry busted on the scene a few years, I wanted to be like Barry. I was the smallest guy. And so that was always the goal for me, was to play professional football. So
well, and in high school, you were the Gatorade Player of the Year in high school.
Yeah.
Tell me about the recruiting process. What was that like for you? Because every athlete has their own individual story and situation with their recruitment. What was
Absolutely.
Yours like?
So, you know, I had a lot of interest from a lot of schools. In that era, you know, when Barry Sanders was playing and you had Thurman Thomas and
some of the greats.
Some of the greats that met some of the metrics that I had. And, you know, I had a little boogie. I could move a little bit. The one thing that I overlooked was the factor that I didn't really like going to school. You know, being a latchkey kid, I developed some bad habits, right? I developed some habits that, you know, that ended up costing me opportunities to go on to Division I school out of high school. Thereby, I didn't qualify out of high school, so I had to go to junior college ranks. And with that being said, you know, my recruiting process was such as coaches would come in, man, we love your film, Kalen, because, you know, there wasn't video that you could send. All the coaches had to come and get the VHSs to send back then, right? They weren't sending links, so you can do it real quick. So everyone came to the school. And my high school was a really good high school. So I had a lot of coaches come. They wanted to offer me scholarships. But once they went up to the counseling office, they noticed that, hey, I wasn't going to be a qualifier. Thereby, it was like, hey, we'll see you in a couple years. We look forward to recruiting you. So that's the process I took. I went up with Coach Greg Croshaw up at Dixie College, you know, a powerhouse at the junior college ranks. And I went and did that thing. And, you know, I ended up winning the Heisman Trophy for junior college.
That's right, player of the year.
And I had scholarship offers to anywhere I wanted to go to. And, you know, it ultimately came down to BYU because when I came up here, I had a religious experience that I felt as if this was the place that I needed to be. It wasn't the right place for me from a play style. You know, there was a lot of other places that ran the ball that were dominant with the tail eye back formation that I could have went to and had a very, very successful collegiate career. But it came down to more than that. I had a feeling that there was more than football
mm-hmm.
for me here. And there was things that I needed to accomplish here at BYU. And they weren't necessarily football related. And so that's why I made the decision to come to BYU. And it wasn't a football decision. It was based off of a spiritual impression that I had. And I just had to go with it because I knew it was what I needed to do.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, and we will get into that when we come back. More with Kalen Hall here on the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. My name is Jason Shepherd. Happy to have former BYU football player Kalen Hall joining me as my guest today. And before the break, you were talking about out of Dixie.
Yeah.
You had a lot of success at Dixie.
Yeah.
And you had an opportunity to go pretty much wherever you wanted to go. But BYU was the place that you ended up at. But you said it was not a football decision.
Right.
Explain what you're talking about.
I mean, honestly, it's like, at that point in time in my life, I had just, a year previous to that decision time, I was baptized a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I had, you know, I had a little change of heart and mind on what I really wanted out of life, right? I still wanted to play. I wanted to play professionally. But I knew there were some other things that I needed to accomplish, right, to make me a more grounded person. And so when I came up to BYU on a recruiting trip, it just felt peaceful. It felt like home. Although my mom didn't necessarily want me to come to BYU, she wanted me to, you know, to take some of the other opportunities mm-hmm. that I had. Would have been a little bit easier path to get to the professional ranks and whatnot. But for me, it was more about, man, I just really, there's some voids in my life that I need to fill. And where I'm going to fill those and where I'm going to become a complete person is here. And that's, you know, and I knew that I could play good football here. They played, you know, Notre Dame and Penn State. I knew that there still would be good football to be played, but it wasn't necessarily the primary reason for coming here. And so that's kind of why I made that my decision.
I do want to ask you about your conversion story. But before I do that, what role did religion play in your life growing up? What was there a role that it played? as you were growing up?
Not really at all. You know, not as if I went to church outside of, you know, when I went with a friend on occasion, and I had some friends that were members of the church that I went on occasion to, you know, to a sacrament service mm-hmm. with them, and went to a couple of, you know, farewells, and then went to a couple of, you know, Baptist churches on occasion. So it didn't play a huge or any significant part into my early age life. But, you know, it was still there. I had an uncle that was a minister back home in Michigan. And so obviously there was some voids that I knew were missing, but it wasn't something that was like a norm that I was involved with on a daily basis.
So then what changed for you when you were in St. George that ultimately led you to seeking out more about the church and ultimately joining the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
Jack DeMooney. That's just as simple as I can put it. Jack and I were at Dixie College together. We were freshmen together at Dixie. And at one of our practices, it just so happened that I did something. I made a move, and he's like, "Woo, you remind me of my man Thurman Thomas." And I was like, "Thurman Thomas?" I said, "Man, I'm a huge Buffalo Bills fan. I love Thurman Thomas." And so it just struck up a kinship and a friendship from that encounter on the football field to a similarity that we had in professional teams in which we liked with the player and the team. And then from there, it just was like, hey, man, I just started to hang around JD and some of the fellas that was there with him, and we just became friends. And, you know, the family draw of mm-hmm. the Polynesian community was a draw for me, you know, because how family-oriented that they were. And I didn't grow up like that, right? And so that was a void, right? The nature of family, important family was. And then we started going up to Salt Lake, going up to the Ivy Towers together and staying at the Kafusi's house. Jeff Kafusi and Mr. and Mrs. Kafusi, you know, they used to have us up to their house. And you just saw this love, and you saw this family orientation. And I was like, man, this stuff right here, this is what it is. This is what it's all about. And that's the things that I was missing growing up, right? I didn't grow up with a father in the household. And you see these solid foundational families with mom and dad and all these brothers and sisters. And those are the things that were missing. And so I wanted that. And so that made the conversion process much easier for me to accept, because there was already things that I was missing. And so when Jack introduced the missionaries to me, it was a smooth transition, right? Because I was ready to receive the elements that dealt with that type of thing. So
what, or maybe how, has that decision, and I realize this is a very loaded question and you probably could spend the rest of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
What has that decision meant to you, and what course had that one decision put you on? Now you look back on
everything. Look, quite frankly, I'd have been at Oklahoma State. I would have been at Oklahoma. I could have been at Michigan State. I would have been in a much different place. I would have never met my wife. I would have never had the core values that I have today. Thereby, I would never have gotten married as early as I had. I wouldn't have had my children when I had. And so the sequence of actions that took place based on Jack being the devout follower of his faith that he was allowed me to be receptive to the message that he was given. Thereby, the whole outcome of the Hall family and the Hall sons and the Hall daughter would have changed. It would not never have been. We have never would have been at BYU. None of my four boys would have ever came to BYU. Jaron's success, KJ's success, Dawson's success, all their successes, the things that Kyson was able to accomplish, none of that things, those things would ever happen. The relationships and friendships that were made, and the extension of our very large extended family now with all of our extended relatives and family members, it would never have been the case. You know, none of this would have happened. You know, this is a fraternity, right? It really is. This is a BYU is something that it extends beyond just the sport itself. I have so many friends, and I have so many extended nephews and nieces, and my kids know so many different people because of the choice that I made to accept what I accepted, you know, over 30 years ago. And it means the world to me, right? This place means a lot. And it's not just about the sport itself. It means a lot, and it goes deep.
Well, I know you had said that when you chose BYU, it was for more than just football, but the football was pretty good. Football tradition was very, very good.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the football side of coming to BYU and the opportunities that were presented to you when you got here.
Yeah, look, I was able to become a more rounded football player, right, because of the style of play that Coach Lavelle had introduced to BYU, a wide-open passing game. And as a pure I-back, you know, I was used to getting 35, 40 touches a game carrying the ball. Now, you know, you get maybe 10, 12 touches, but you can have an opportunity to go catch, you know, 10 balls, right? So you became a more well-rounded player. I was able to, you know, improve my hands and improve my intellect on blocking schemes. I became very aware of, you know, pass protection and slides and back-end defenses and offensive schematics. And it just was – it allowed me to become a better overall football player. Maybe it didn't necessarily fit my ultimate skill set. I could have done, you know, better things from a statistic standpoint somewhere else. But, man, I became a much better player. Got in some big games, had some wonderful rivalries, was able to go to Notre Dame and go to play Penn State and, you know, play all these national powerhouses. And, you know, we were able to do some really special things when I was here. And the teammates that I made, that I was able to play with, man, these guys are some of my best friends even to this day. And we played some really good football. We won some conference championships, went to some bowl games. And you know what? We played some of the best of the best around the country. So it was a lot of fun.
I want to ask you about one of those teammates. What type of role did a guy named Jamal Willis play on you in your life?
Oh, Jamal's a great friend of mine. Like, we grew up together in Las Vegas.
Yep.
We played youth football against each other. Jamal was here a year before I got here. A lot of people were like, man, how's that going to fit? You guys are the same position, blah, blah, blah. It's not going to work out. And that was, you know, before I decided to commit to BYU. I was like, yeah, all things work out the way they're supposed to. And Jamal's been a good friend of mine even to this day. You know, we speak on a regular basis. We essentially raised our kids at the same time. We have children the same ages. Jamal's he currently works here at BYU, and he does phenomenal things with his side business that he does with his cutback training, and we're just good friends to this day. I was just talking to him a couple of days ago about some things, and you know, we have laughs. And Jamal, you know, he's been a huge influence in my life about being a man of integrity and having someone who's worked hard and who's been very successful. And he's been very he's been an aggressive, business-minded person as well as to achieving the things that he wants to achieve in his life. And he's raised a wonderful family as well.
Do you remember, when you look back on your playing career, do you remember more about the relationships or the games?
Oh, relationships.
Yeah, isn't it funny how that is?
Yeah,
it's 100%. Every athlete I talk to, it's when I ask them questions similar to that, they all go to the relationship part first. Why do you think that is?
Just because the relationships are what gets you to the options that happen within the game, right? Yeah. The relationships are the things that drive the emotions of the impact of the big plays that take place, right? And you remember the relationships because the relationships are the foundations in which allow you to make the big plays because you trust your brothers in arms on the field. That's why you always go back to the relationships.
I know you get asked all the time, hey, what's your favorite moment? What do you remember the most? Do you have something that stands out above another?
No, not necessary. I mean, there's just so many. I just, you know, I do remember the Penn State game here. Penn State was ranked pretty good and had Kerry Collins and, you know, O.J. Duffy and had all of these, you know, future NFL guys. And they came here and we really kicked their butts, right? We just put it to them. And I remember Joppa, you know, Coach Paterno. He was in Vegas and after the game, and he was like, man, I'll tell you what, you know, BYU had these two guys out there. I wish we would have recruited, you know, because he, you know, Penn State was a running school.
Sure.
How do we miss out on those two guys? And so that was something that I always remember. And Notre Dame, when we went out there and played against, you know, it was Demetrius DeBose was on the other side playing linebacker, Brian Young, and they had Jerome Bettis and Brooks on the running back, Rick Meyer. I mean, so some of these, a lot of guys that were NFL guys that we played against. So you always remember that. You remember those events that took place. So because they were, you know, pretty big at the time. So
you mentioned a little bit ago that if you hadn't come to BYU, you wouldn't have met your wife.
Uh-huh.
Your wife also an athlete here at BYU. BYU gymnast.
Yep.
What was the courtship like? How did you two end up together?
So it was because of Leslie Willis, because of Jamal's wife.
Yeah.
So Jamal was dating Leslie, and Leslie and my wife Holly grew up in the same gym together, so they were good friends. And so they were at school. Leslie was a year older than Holly, and they were in the in the study hall area, and she's with Leslie, and I saw her, and I was like, man. So I went back to Jamal. I was like, hey, who was that? And so, you know, Jamal kind of made the introduction half-heartedly. He's like, man, I'm not getting involved with that. You're going to mess around and get me in trouble. You know, what are those?
Sure,
With your friends who think you just out there trying to chase girls, right? And so, but, you know, from there, you know, I just kept pestering her and at study hall, and we met, and, you know, we hit it off, and you know, we've been married over 30 years, and it's, you know, 5 kids later, and, you know, soon to be 5 grandkids, and it's been a wonderful ride. Holly's a wonderful lady. You know, she gave up her career to start our family, and you know, we haven't looked back.
What's life like today? We talked about what you're doing in terms of, you know, head coach and doing things like that, but what's life like for you now?
It's good. So I work for Gabe Reed. Gabe is a former BYU football player.
Of course.
I run his domestic market, government-based project management and contracting firm. And so we do government projects all over military establishments all over the United States. And so I run that because he's on a mission right now. He's a mission president right now. So I run the North American division for him. And so, you know, a lot of project management, a lot of bidding, estimating on jobs, a lot of project oversights. And so I do that mostly during the day. And after I'm done with that, and then, you know, my evenings are kind of consumed with football, right?
Yeah.
Football workouts and practices. And we do everything in the evening, you know, at our program. So it works with all of our paraprofessionals who are, you know, volunteering their time. And so, you know, it's a busy day. You know, you wake up early, you work early. Yeah, you get home a little late, you work late, and then, you know, you fill a little bit in with chasing your daughter around to her little soccer events and whatnot, and then little weekends with the grandkids. And so, you know, you keep busy.
Yeah.
You know, you try to keep a little you time as well. So
I'm curious your thoughts, because you were talking about how, you know, when you were at BYU and you got to play all these teams, Penn State, you know, Notre Dame, all these schools. You know, now it's a little different, but now BYU's back to playing some of these big schools again.
Absolutely.
Being in the Big 12.
Yeah.
I'm curious what you made of last season and this move to the Big 12, and obviously heading into year number 2 in a pretty impressive conference.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough conference. I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of people have their own thoughts about, you know, what the football was this past year. It was a transition, okay? The roster wasn't where it needed to be able to compete, understanding that injuries take place in football, okay? Your number ones, yeah, you can compete. But when you get down to your number twos or number threes, and once you start getting injured, I mean, you need to have time to build up your roster, and it takes time. I thought the coaches did a phenomenal job in consideration of the conference, the strength of the conference, the type of opponents that they were playing, and the amount of injuries that you're going to get in football that they had to deal with. And so it's going to be a process of flipping the roster and not necessarily going out there and chasing transfer portal kids, because that doesn't necessarily work with trying to build the culture that is established here at BYU. It's a delicate balance between transfer kids, local kids, high school kids, junior college kids, kids that meet the culture of BYU.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do that internally, it's not going to work. It will blow up. And what I mean by blow up is it will not work. You will have a divided front in your locker room. And if your locker room is divided, it's not going to work for successes on the field. You need a lot of people that collectively come from differences but have the same and right mindset in alignment with what the program wants to do and can do. You're not going to change what BYU is. It's not going to happen. Thereby, you have to do your best to collectively find the pieces that can fit here and that can thrive here. And so it's a process.
As we begin to wrap things up, and again, I appreciate your time today. This has been fantastic, and I appreciate you doing this. What's next? I mean, is there something that you've always wanted to do that maybe is still on the horizon for you, or what's next for you and your family, you think?
I don't know. I really enjoy you know, this appointment I have as a head coach.
Yep.
It's not my job, but I really enjoy doing it. I love doing things for my community. You know, there's also some things that, you know, personally that, you know, I'm looking at possibly getting into as well as we move into the, you know, to the next few years. I really want to continue to follow and to help to raise my grandchildren. You know, I'm definitely going to enjoy following my son's NFL career. I believe he's going to have a very long one. So, you know, I definitely want to do that. And I want to just be an outlet and a conduit where I am going to be starting a podcast. I'm going to start a podcast talking about just, you know, it's the real deal. You know, that's kind of what it's going to be about.
Okay.
Real conversations about real life. And it's going to be uncut. And, you know, it's going to be something that I think a lot of parents need to hear, because unfortunately today, a lot of kids are struggling. A lot of families are struggling. I'm not even talking about monetarily. I'm just talking about in life. Kids that come from affluent backgrounds, kids that come from poverty, it's all the same. A lot of kids are struggling in this world in which we live in today. And I believe a lot of it stems from we're not having real conversations. You know, we're buffering things and we're suppressing things from these young folks that they need to hear it, and we need to be honest with them. And there's been a lot of apathy going on in our society. And unfortunately, we can call it whatever we want, but the way I see it, I think more people need to have honesty with love and with care in order to be able to get beyond a lot of this stuff that is dragging people down. It's sad. It's a sad statement to make of where we are. The wonderful country in which we live in, the best in the world, but we still got to fix some things. And I think that, you know, being honest and having doing it with love and having a Christ-like influence, I think those are some of the things that can help.
All right, so let's go down the list here then. So former football player.
Yep.
Businessman.
Yep.
Head football coach.
Yep.
Dad.
Yep.
Husband.
Yep.
Grandfather.
Yep.
And now podcaster. We're adding podcast. Hey. Am I missing anything? Anything
no,
else there?
No, we're good. That's enough, I think.
I'd say you've got a lot on your plate.
Yeah.
Kalen, thank you so much for doing this. I really do appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed it. And I know our listeners will to be able to get to know you a little bit more. People know you, but to be able to hear your stories about growing up and your experiences, I know people appreciate that, and I certainly do too. So thank you so much for doing this.
And thank you as well.
All right. Thanks once again to my guest, Kalen Hall. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Waugh. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.